failure.
Which is a lot of successful people, when you read interviews of them, it's uncanny just how many people are driven by fear of failure, and how in our culture it almost seems to be a natural approach to self-motivation. We don't even really think about it when we hear somebody saying, well, yeah, I get up and I really put my effort into my art or my job or my whatever endeavors because I don't want to fail. I don't want to look bad. It's very much tied into our survival. So much of our emotional underpinnings of the brain is tied in with survival. After all, the emotional underpinnings are, in fact, the survival part of the brain, amygdala, hippocampus, and stuff like that. And our fear is, we have this deep fear of falling behind, not looking good, worrying about what other people think about us. And we can use this fear of looking bad in front of other people and a desire, on the other hand, to look good, to get approval. The Buddha called this like the underpinning of the unskillful way that we try to motivate ourselves in life. And it is unskillful for a number of reasons. To go through a couple of them, when we motivate ourselves, when we use fear of failing or not doing well as a motivational tool, what we do is we build up enormous stress that we associate with whatever project that we're undertaking. It's a test, it's a class, it's a piece of art, it's a job or a project at work, whatever it is that, or just we're putting on a party, or we're starting a band, and we want to look good. We want to have people like us. And the fear of how we will present and how we will be received can seem to be a very natural part of the process. But actually what it does is, A, it builds up self-consciousness. It makes us, while we're undertaking the endeavor and putting the effort in, it makes us extremely self-aware, and it adds this entire level of thought that doesn't need to be there. I wonder what other people will think about this. I wonder if this will look good in comparison with other bands and other pieces of art and other students and other people at work. I wonder, you know, if this will be received well. This is an entire level of thinking and stress that really is not part of the creation project of whatever we're doing, whatever we're putting our minds at. We're adding on top of the project this entire level of self-centered storylines and projections about the future that create all this tightness in the body and this constant jumping away from awareness of what we're doing to this fantasy land where we're wondering how will the thing I'm working on, how will it be received? How will the teacher like it? Will my friends like this? Will the other people at work respect me? Will, you know, is this song that I'm writing, this painting I'm painting, how will it be, what will people think about it? So when we're jumping away, we're pulling away our awareness. And on top of that, the integrity of whatever we're focusing on is being diluted, because we're no longer just doing the work for itself. We're doing the work partially worrying. We're editing ourselves and we're worrying, well, how will this contrast? How will this be accepted? And another problem is, even when we succeed at what we do, when people give us praise and approval and love for whatever we do, when they say, oh, that's great, that poem you wrote was terrific, that painting you did was just awesome, you know, I really like, you know, that talk you gave or whatever. What happens is right after we get that approval, that voice pops back up. We're empowering the voice of fear and worry, and we'll focus almost invariably on the one person that doesn't give us the approval. 99 people could say, oh, that's a lovely song. But the one person that's talking or not paying attention or, you know, who's not responding, we'll focus on. Because the mind that worries about how people receive us and what people think about us is a mind that scans and looks and doesn't really deeply take in approval. It seeks it, but at the same time, it keeps jumping to the next thing to worry about. We're karmically, rather than building up a sense of good motivation, we're karmically setting ourselves up for more and more fear and more worrying about how other people think about us. There was a wonderful, wonderful study where psychologists, and this is all in the a wonderful book that summarizes clinical studies called The Happiness Hypothesis, but they broke parents down into two types. The parents that would reward their children for the effort that they put in and, you know, reward them, whether, I don't know, with an allowance or how they rewarded them, but if the kids put the time in to do the work, they would get a reward. And then there was a second set of parents that rewarded their kids for their grades. Didn't matter how much effort they put in. If they put in little effort but they got an A, they would be rewarded. If they put in a lot of effort but they got a D, they weren't rewarded. First parents, didn't matter what the grades were, if the kids put in the time and the effort, they would reward them. And if they didn't, they wouldn't reward them. So two different strategies of rewarding their children for doing homework. Well, it turns out that the kids that were rewarded just for effort, these kids flourished, became very well adapted and very easy to work with. They're very creative. They inevitably wound up staying in school longer because they associated simply the joy of putting in effort was enough to be rewarded. On the other hand, the kids that were rewarded for their grades, not for the effort, were rewarded for how the teachers responded to them rather than just the integrity of how much work they put in. These kids wound up dropping out earlier. They wound up picking up one tool, which is the ability to argue over grades. They became much more litigious with their teachers when the teacher would try to give them a lower grade because they knew that would affect how their parents viewed them. They inevitably found school less enjoyable and learned didn't go on to higher education because their parents were instilling this idea that you get ahead in life not by the integrity of the attention and the effort that you put in. Instead, you get ahead by making other people like you. And that turned out to be an extremely self-sabotaging message to put across. So, before I go on to some of the implications of this, also on the other hand, the flip side, failure. In my experience, while success can keep people trapped, very often, people who are driven for success are masking this underlying feeling that there's something missing, there's something wrong with me, and they're trying to fill this emptiness, this feeling of not being good enough by achieving more. And while they're successful, they don't have any glimpse or any clear recognition of, wow, I'm being driven for success by this underlying feeling that there's something missing, that I'm not good enough, that I'm not, you know, that I don't have the love that I deserve. So I'm going to get it. And every time they get it, they're trying to fill it up, an absence in here with something out there. It doesn't work. It just keeps this chain of needing more and more approval going. Now, on the other hand, failure can be a real gift. Getting fired, getting dumped, painting something awful, writing a song that sounds like shit, writing a poem that's just dreadful that people don't like. First of all, what happens very often when we do something and it's not greeted with any success and we don't even feel good about it, is it opens us up to seeing just how much need for approval and how much drive was going into this. Because after all, if it's just a song or a painting or a project or something and it goes wrong, if it's just that, we'll just go, okay, I'll try again. But if there's this sense of real deep, oh, this is awful, I've been rejected, I've failed, then we can see that we've attached this sense of self, this sense of identity, this yearning for a sense of who am I into this project. And that's not healthy. That's not healthy. Knowing who we are, fulfillment, deep happiness comes from within. It doesn't come from doing something with other people in mind. So often in my life, when I've run into where things haven't worked out, it's opened in other doors for me that I never would have been able to see were it not for the original failure. I've been dumped from relationships. Inevitably, I wind up with somebody that I'm happier with. When I'm dumped, when I've been dumped in my life, there's this feeling of like, oh, I'm unlovable. There's something wrong with me. Really, all that person is saying is, I'm not going to waste your time anymore. I'm not accepting you or wanting to be with you for who you are. And that's great. That's really wonderful. Why should I, want to be with somebody who doesn't fully accept and want to be with me for who I am? Jobs where I was laid off from this job about 6 years ago with 100 other people. Still, part of my mind wanted to take it personally. 100 other people lost their jobs at the same time. It was just a downsizing of an entire department. But when I did that, it liberated me to look for work in an entirely different domain. It was really an incredible gift. But if you had asked me right after or right during the process, my brain would have gone, oh, this is awful. This is awful. There's really an opening, a sense of wonderful letting go that can happen in making mistakes, in giving ourselves permission to do stuff that without really attaching our sense of whether it's a success or not based on how other people approve or disapprove or what they think. And part of that permission comes from being willing to fail, being willing to do something, to take risks, to do something and really, really suck. I learned to skateboard at 45. And I have to say that if you really, really want to experience like what could be core humiliation, there's 10-year-olds with little backwards baseball caps whizzing by me. And I'm, on this thing, barely staying upright, completely incapable of doing anything but just pushing myself. The slightest pebble could send me spiraling. Meanwhile, they're doing ollies and leaping up on stage. And they're laughing at me as they go by. And Bruce, I was just like, ugh. And after a while, I was like, this is great. This is great. I'm totally giving myself permission to suck. And that's great. Because any way I learn something, A, at the beginning, I'm going to suck. If I learn to play the trumpet, God forbid. If I try to learn another language, language, if I try to, get a motorcycle license, whatever it is I do, I am going to suck at it at first. And embracing sucking is the most wonderful, liberating way to become able to learn things. Dreading needing to immediately become good or immediately look good in front of people is the way to shortcut ourselves, to deprive ourselves of the joy of being human, of being, of going through the entire process of life, which means at everything we do, like a child learning to walk, we're going to fall a fucking million times before we walk elegantly. And that's one of the parts of meditation as well. Being willing for a million times to sit down and have your mind not shut up until you have that meditation 3 years in. That's so peaceful where you drop into just such a sense of oneness with the body that, you know, that it's wonderful. But if we, up until that point, if we greet each meditation with, ah, this was a failure, you know, this was horrible because I didn't get calm, I didn't relax, and I want this to so be, I want this to be just effortless, then we're just adding more stress to the whole equation. So a couple of things to walk away with from this. The first is that the best voice to encourage in our mind is a voice that rewards us for putting effort into whatever it is, and at the other hand, lets go of giving a shit what people think. As the Buddha said, there'll be people who, if you talk, there'll be people who think you talk too much, there'll be people who thought you talk too little, and there'll be people, even if you talk the exact right amount, who won't be happy with you. You're never going to satisfy everybody. Making your sense of achievement contingent upon who's ever your audience is making your sense of fulfillment completely taken out of your hands. Because you could be... actually, one of my favorite songs I've ever written, I wrote the song and I played it for my girlfriend and she was having a bad day and she didn't pay attention. This was years ago. Years ago, I was deflated. I was like, I didn't want to play this song for anybody else. Because it was just like, oh, this song must suck. She's yawning. Actually, she always yawns. So, but that's the, you know, if we're making our sense of happiness, fulfillment, our sense of accomplishment based on what other people think, how other people, you know, react to it, then, of course, we are completely taking any possibility of joy and a sense of accomplishment out of our own. And we're making our sense of fulfillment completely conditional upon what mood our audience is in. It's not a good trade. It's not a good trade. It's much better to encourage a voice that just feels good about effort. And the Buddha recommended this. He said one of the most important reflections to have in a meditation at the end is just to note, wow, did I feel good at any point? And if I did, just feel really good that we took the time. Or if we did something that was skillful where we could have been selfish, but instead of being selfish, we were generous. Or if we were honest when we could have simply avoided, or if we walked through an interpersonal dialogue that was difficult, stop and feel really good. Set out the time to just get in touch with this feeling of, yeah, I've done something that's difficult. The more we empower this voice that recognizes the things that we do well, the times that we try, the effort that we put in, the more that voice will be a part of our creation process rather than this fear of failure. Another good thing is when we're working and we're noticing that there's a lot of fear or worry or concern about what people will think about something, find where that stress sits in the body. In my case, it's my stomach. And I just, when I'm working on something and I notice there's a little voice that says, ah, oh, nobody's going to like this or whatever, you know, this talk I'm preparing, nobody's going to give a shit about it, whatever. I just find that area of the body and I breathe and I relax it. And sooner than you would suspect, the voice that's worrying about other people starts to dissipate the more I relax the conditions that are bringing it about. Another tool that really works when dealing with fear of failure is when something goes wrong, especially horribly wrong. We've all had one of those days where it just seems like everything we touch turns into the finest grade of shit imaginable. And the thing I always practice then is to remind myself that there's nothing personal about it. Because every single human being has experienced rejection, has experienced disapproval, disappointment, has been dumped. Every single human being has done something that people haven't felt good about or received warmly. Every human being has made mistakes. So the moment I strip out this, oh, I can't believe this happened to me. I can't believe I looked this bad in front of people. The moment, and I just say, oh, I totally can believe that I've done something that everybody else has gone through. That takes away so much of the stress involved with failing, of making, of not, you know, being received well, of fear of doing things in front of people, fear of speaking in front of people, because it's no longer about me. It's just about the human condition. Just to see if there's any last note. Oh yeah, finally. It's really important to realize that at every moment there's challenges going on. And right now, whatever we're doing, we can ask ourselves, am I being honest? Am I paying attention? Am I really, you know, doing my best to stay open? With every conversation I have, am I really listening? Am I really being attentive? Am I really being honest? Am I really saying what I believe is the truth without being hurtful? Unnecessarily so. When we realize how many challenges are going on all the time, it takes away the stress of the things that we're, this idea that it's all about this one thing I'm doing. You know? And instead of in this one effort that we're really trying to do well, the questions again to ask are, am I paying attention? Am I doing as well as I can? Am I staying focused? If I make a mistake in a relationship or in an endeavor, am I open enough to acknowledge it with somebody that I respect? If we can say these things, then it's always a success, regardless of what anybody else says. If I do something honestly with as much attention as I can, and I'm open to acknowledge when I could have done better, these are the conditions that I need to make. The success has nothing to do with what anybody else thinks. Thereby, I'm taking away the contingency of success totally away from how other people receive me, and I'm just making it completely contingent upon my efforts. My efforts. That's the only thing that matters. Not the grade I get from you. Just did I do the best I can. So I thank you for listening. That's tonight's talk on fear of failure. I hope that there was something in there that might resonate.